Now it's time to listen to some new jazz releases. We're going to hear the new one from Keith Jarrett, new three from Keith Jarrett. It's a triple album. Also, the Jimmy Cobb Quartet, Stu Hunter's latest. It's called To Gathering. And we'll begin with this. This is Bernie McGann, and it's his new double album, Solar. Well, there he goes. That's Bernie McGann, and that's from a new double CD called Solar. We heard the beginning of Salam. They're mostly Bernie McGann compositions on here. The other players, Roger Mannins, tenor sax, Warwick Alder, trumpet, Lloyd Swanton, acoustic bass, John Poche, drums, and, of course, Bernie McGann on alto. Jessica Nicholas is the jazz critic of the age, and welcome back to the show, Jessica.
Thanks, Andy.
Did you enjoy this a lot? I did.
I really, really enjoyed it. I think there's something special about live recordings and the fact this is an entire concert. And in fact, the debut concert by Roger Mannins with the man he considered his hero and still considers his hero makes it doubly impressive, I think. And you can really feel the live atmosphere, can't you? Both among the musicians and you can feel the audience as well.
Yes, it's incredible energy. On this album, and Bernie McGann plays so well. I mean, you can see why he's still Roger Mannin's hero. He didn't do anything to blot his copybook this night, did he?
Absolutely not. And he's, what, in his early 70s, and there's just so much stamina. And John Poche, too, who barely stops throughout the whole night. You think, how long can this go on? But there's, towards the end, well, the end of that tune that we're just listening to, they keep urging him on for solo after solo, and he just keeps giving and giving and giving. They're just, I don't know how much red cordial they were having, but yeah, they were obviously, it's a great band, and they were obviously having a fantastic night.
The thing which is always, I mean, Bernie McGann is one of the most recognisable musicians in jazz, it seems to me. I don't just mean Australian jazz. The sound of his alto saxophone is so distinctive, kind of dry and parched, and yet kind of the lyricism is kind of absolutely forced out of it.
It's like he's squeezing the notes out, isn't he? And the cover, actually, which looks kind of dry, is actually quite evocative and descriptive of his music, that kind of coarse, textured surface and a kind of no-nonsense approach. There's usually very few arrangements on these tunes. It's very kind of loose, but certainly nonetheless engaging for that just fantastic playing and fantastic interaction among, obviously, some very... career-length colleagues, and then this newbie, Roger Mannans, who just fits like a glove, incredibly compatible soloing, I would have thought, and lots of extended soloing. At one point, I actually timed one of Bernie's solos, goes for a full 5 minutes, and invention just never flags.
No, it doesn't, does it? And he's an old-style player, in as much as he does that thing that players of his vintage are wont to do, which is to quote things as they fly past. You suddenly hear a kind of, three notes of a famous tune or half a bar of a standard just flying past.
But it doesn't appear to be, at least, calculated.
No.
You can hear, there's pauses, because he's never playing just for the sake of it, and then he's just absolutely in the moment, nothing preconceived or calculated. And yet these things that sort of come out of his memory or maybe inspired by the other players, but it feels completely spontaneous.
Yes. What's the best way to listen to an album like this? I mean, you could, of course, stay at home and listen to the whole thing as though you were at the Sound Lounge in Sydney in 2006 where it was recorded. Is that the ideal way to listen, do you think, through?
That is actually what I did, because then you get a sense of the endurance and the energy, which does kind of, it goes in waves. That song, Spirit Song, for example, actually, it's also worth pointing out, these compositions have become like Australian standards, a lot of them. Mm. Somebody once said to me, what is the definition of a standard, particularly in Australia, where maybe we don't have that many? And one of those pointers is when it becomes something that other musicians would play. And I have heard Spirit Song done many times, and certainly it's been recorded many times by Bernie. And also maybe worth pointing out that ballad medley, which does bring out a different side, a much more kind of legato sound from Bernie and the other players too.
Yes, this is where they play "Lover Man" and "Where Are You" and "My Old Flame" in the middle of the second CD.
And then you get kind of trio of trios where you get to highlight one horn at a time, and the rest of the time they're just interacting in a loose and, I think, really exciting fashion.
It's on the Rufus label. It's a double CD. It's called Solar, Bernie McGann, and you can actually sample it at greater length by listening to The Weekend Planet tonight after the 10 o'clock news, because it's the featured album on The Weekend Planet with Doug Spencer. You can also find the details of all of the CDs that we're talking about by going to the Music Show's website after the show. You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm with Jessica Nicholas, and we are reviewing new jazz CDs. And speaking of veterans, the Jimmy Cobb Quartet. Jimmy Cobb is the last man standing from the sextet that recorded Kind of Blue 50 years ago. He's the drummer. And let's listen to the Jimmy Cobb Quartet now. This is an album of mostly standards, and this is a famous one, Stairway to the Stars. Thank you. That's the flugelhorn of Roy Hargrove. We heard Russell Malone on guitar, John Weber on bass, and, well, to say on drums is almost like an overstatement. That was Jimmy Cobb and the Jimmy Cobb Quartet, Stairway to the Stars. It's called Jazz in the Key of Blue, this album, and it's on the Chesky label. Did you enjoy this, Jessica?
I did, but just from your brief comment on it the other day, maybe not quite as much as you, Andy. And I think maybe for me this album suffers just a little bit in the context of all the other three releases that we're reviewing today, which just filled me with so much excitement that this one felt just a little insipid, I suppose. Look, the playing is beautiful. I think Roy Hargrove is absolutely the highlight of the album. His playing is beautiful.
Yes.
His tone and there's so little variation. I know it's jazz in the key of blue, but there could have been, for example, a more bluesy feel to one of them. There's just it's a consistent mood, and I guess that's what they were aiming for. Jimmy Cobb is, as you said, incredibly understated. Sometimes you can
especially
barely...
after John Pochet.
And so, look, he's 80, but John Pochet's no spring chicken either, no. So he's got no excuse.
No, Jimmy Cobb plays brushes from beginning to end on this album, which is, I mean, given that it's his quartet, he really does take a backseat to these other guys.
Yeah, to listen to it, it sounds more like a Roy Hargrove album,
yes.
For example. I think there's one stick on a rim of the bossa nova, which is one of the few rhythm changes. But lucky
it's probably
it's
a mistake.
Lucky it's on Chesky Records because they do pride themselves on sound quality. And it is a beautiful recording, but you probably have to have a good sound system to even hear Jimmy Cobb. Look, I think everyone plays very well. But just, look, I didn't really feel a lot. I was filled with admiration, certainly, at the playing in particular of Roy Hargrove, but it didn't really take me anywhere. It kind of sort of floated in the same place for about an hour, which some may enjoy, but I did long for a little more variety.
You've got more stamina than I, you see, Jessica. This is the thing. After Bernie McGann, I needed this.
I have a friend who would describe this as polite music. In fact, even the guy who writes the liner notes calls it polite. I think he means it as a compliment. I'm sure they achieve what they wanted to achieve. I think it's his Jimmy Cobb's wife and producer in the middle that says that he's able to create these sort of soft floating feels. But, well, it's not quite kind of blue, is it?
You're not a soft floating person, are you?
Well, I am, but I like to float softly and then go somewhere different, as we'll see, indeed, in the two remaining things we're reviewing today.
Yes, indeed. For people who don't know about Chesky Records, I should just point out, you've already alluded to the fact that this is kind of state-of-the-art, natural recording, and you get two pages of the booklet devoted to telling you how they recorded it, complete with a diagram.
That's right. Where
everybody was standing, so that when you sit in front of your speakers with them perfectly positioned either side of your ears, you can see in your mind's eye where everybody is. But there's a note that you may hear the trumpet change places from track to track. Sometimes he felt like moving around.
Very important to know, and it really affects how I listen. Not really. No, look, for me this was really pleasant, but it didn't have a huge impact on me.
Okay, it's the Jimmy Cobb Quartet. It's Jazz in the Key of Blue, and it's on the Chesky Records label. And now we're going to hear something, again, considerably more energetic than we've been listening to. It's the new one from Stu Hunter. It's called The Gathering, and this is from the first track, which is the title track.
Thank you.
That's The Gathering. That's the first track on an album of the same name from Stu Hunter, who was playing piano there. We heard Matt Keegan and Julian Wilson both playing sax, James Greening on trombone, Cameron Undy bass, and Simon Barker drums. Did you enjoy this one, Jessica?
Well, of all the things that we're reviewing today, this is the one that I've got most excited about. I woke up this morning with a big blister on one of my fingers, and I realised that was because I was writing so intensely when I was listening to this yesterday. Particularly, the first one that we just heard has a lot of energy, but by the time you get to the last one, my God, they just build this incredible tension. And my fingers were sort of digging into my pencil. I broke the lead of my pencil.
You're a woman
riveting.
Obsessed.
Well, I read a review of this CD launch in, I think it was part of Jazz Now in Sydney, and John Clare was saying that people were standing up and shouting. It's just got this incredible energy. Other pieces are much more, dark and contracted. There's a beautiful bass solo, arco bass solo from Cameron Undy. This is in some ways an extension of the quartet that he had for his last wonderful suite, The Muse, with the addition of a couple of extra horns here, James Greening on trombone and pocket trumpet, and Julian Wilson on saxophone. And again, it has the feel of a continuous suite, with each piece kind of segueing into the next. And in fact, that was the way it was recorded. Did you know that?
No.
I spoke very briefly to Julian Wilson yesterday, and I said, how was the recording of that music? Because it's quite dense and involved, quite elaborate, really original, and I would have thought quite demanding. And he said, yes, it was. They recorded it straight through in one take. The entire album, without a break. Sat down, exhausted for a couple of hours over lunch, then did it right through again. And that's it. They used mostly one take. So what you hear is very much the intensity of a live recording.
So it's almost, yes, I was going to say, it's almost as live as the Bernie McGann album.
Absolutely. And I just think Stu Hunter is a true original. I'm just not quite sure why he doesn't have a larger profile. Maybe it's because he spends most of his time in the kind of rock and pop world. Mm. But I as a jazz composer, arranger and band leader, I think he's utterly unique.
Yes, yes. And again, some wonderful musicians playing here. And some very recognisable sounds. Matt Keegan's sax. I mean, as soon as he plays a solo, I can see him in my mind's eye playing it. And so it's not just musicians of Bernie McGann's vintage who have distinction in Australian jazz. Some of the younger players too.
And I think, Simon Barker, of course, adds a lot. He's so expressive as a drummer and percussionist. And the three horns were together, sometimes in these kind of slightly atonal, eerie harmonies, and sometimes just blasting. And that final piece almost feels orchestral in its dynamism. Yeah, no, I found this an absolute thrill.
He does. You're right. You're right to draw attention, I think, to that. That he creates a big sound. It's orchestrated.
And some of the horn sections sound almost Ellingtonian, and then other times there's a distinctive beat that feels almost like you're at a rock concert.
Yes, and a great cover too, I must say. I think it looks fabulous. This CD.
You're right. Even the cover is alluring and different, and it looks kind of mysterious, something like an exotic children's fairy tale from another world. It really draws you in, just like his music.
Yes. All right. Well, speaking of being drawn in, actually, look, before we get to Keith Jarrett, just let me say, because I shall forget otherwise, that I misread the dates of the Sydney Symphony Orchestra's performances earlier. And if you go to the Sydney Opera House tomorrow night to hear Haydn's Creation, you're going to be really disappointed because it's not on. It's only on tonight. So if you want to catch a performance of the Creation by Haydn by the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, you've got one opportunity to do it, and it's 8 o'clock tonight at the Sydney Opera House Concert Hall. So Keith Jarrett. Three CDs worth of his improvising, done in two performances, one in Paris and one in London. It's very hard to know where to start, Jessica. You start.
Well, okay. Well, you know, I was thinking when I was listening to this the other day that I've always admired people, fans, who'll travel to the other side of the world to hear a particular musician. I've travelled interstate, but not quite. And I just, by the time I got to the end of all three CDs, first time through, almost in tears, I thought, right, that's it. I have to see Keith Jarrett. So, and particularly the last tune that we're going to end with a little bit later on, I thought, I think there are people that you need to travel to see. He's certainly never going to come here again. And that's the kind of impact this head. And I think, did you read the liner notes before you listened to this?
No, not before I listened. No, I didn't. I listened first and then I read the liner notes and then I listened again.
Yeah, but I think that's the way I did it too, because I don't really like to read reviews or even the liner notes to sort of colour my opinions. And look, I found the album extraordinary anyway, or the albums. And then when I read about his kind of personal breakdown, really, the loss of his marriage and the agony he was going through, the state of near sort of nervous breakdown, really, just before and during these pieces, and the importance that they held for the personal significance of them, really adds an extra resonance, I think.
Yes, I think it's important to say that although actually on one level what we're listening to here is one jazz pianist's personal therapy, it doesn't sound like that. And you listening to it innocently, you would have no idea that he was working so many things out.
No, I agree. And I think it's important people say, you know, that he's back to the days of old, that these solo recordings are not like the ones from the 70s where he's playing, or even later when he's playing these sort of 40-minute stretches of a whole journey. They're more compact pieces. They can still journey to some fantastic places, but it tends to be more consistent within one compact piece. But
I regretted that slightly, that aspect of it. I must admit, I like to be able, when Keith Jarrett starts to improvise, I sort of feel secure in the knowledge that he's still going to be playing the same piece in 45 minutes' time. And the fact that he kept stopping and people kept clapping bothered me a little bit.
Well, look, I read some interviews where he talked about that process, and he said when he first decided to come back to solo recording after a break, after his chronic fatigue and so on, he started experimenting with that long format and he just found that it wasn't speaking to him anymore.
Yes, and also probably wasn't helping his chronic fatigue syndrome.
Probably not, yeah, because they take so much out of him. And you read, and what did you think of the I don't know, personal exposé in the, I mean, typically ECM recordings don't usually have liner notes.
No, they don't. But Keith Jarrett is although in many ways a private man, I mean, he also is what's the expression, an oversharer on occasions. This is one of those occasions. But listen, musically, he can overshare with me as often as he wants.
Absolutely. It takes you to some fantastic places. And you were saying earlier that I don't like relaxing and floating. I'm not that. That's not true. But if you're relaxing and floating for hours on end, you can long for something. Whereas if you've clung to a raft in a storm and then the sea becomes calm, you appreciate that calm so much more. And I think when you get to the there's a lot of sort of spiky abstraction, a lot of darkness, a lot of bristling notes and sort of crystal piercing pieces. So when you eventually drop into a ballad that feels like it was always there or an incredibly soulful groove, you appreciate it so much more. It's like your reward, really.
Yes, it is. And I'm afraid we're going to hear the reward now, which is a little bit like cheating, because it's like sort of talking about a new recording of Tristan and Isolde and then playing the end of the Liebestod. But that's what we're going to do. Jessica, thank you very much indeed for talking about these new releases, and look forward to the next time.
Thanks, Andy. It's been a pleasure.
This is the end of the third CD from Keith Jarrett's Testament, his concerts in Paris and London. The music really speaks for itself. So I'll just say that after the news, we will hear the Freshwater Trio playing for us live, and then we'll meet Smokey Robinson. Here's Keith Jarrett.